The snow still swirled in the outer darkness, and I toyed with the idea of getting dressed. But I'd only have to strip again, so I decided to make a dash for it. With the car boot open, it seemed to take a long time to fish out the bottles and flutter valve, with the flakes settling thickly on my naked flesh. Back in the bar, I looked round for a spare man to help me. But there was no lessening of the feverish activity. I would have to roll this cow onto her side and inject into her milk vein without assistance. It all depended on how comatose she was. And she must have been pretty far gone, because when I braced my feet against the tubular steel and pushed both hands against her shoulder, she flopped over without resistance. To keep her there, I lay on top of her as I pushed in the needle and ran the calcium into the vein. One snag was that my sprawling position took me right underneath the neighbouring cow on the right, a skittish sort of animal who didn't welcome the rubber-booted legs tangling with her hind feet. She expressed her disapproval by treading painfully on my ankles and giving me a few smart kicks on the thigh, but I dared not move because the calcium was flowing in beautifully. When the bottle was empty, I kneed my patient back onto her chest and ran another bottle of calcium, magnesium and phosphorus under her skin. By the time I had finished and rubbed away the subcutaneous fluid, number 87 was looking decidedly happier. I didn't hurry over cleaning and putting away my injection outfit and re-soaping my arms, because I knew that every minute would bring back strength to my patient. The lightning response to intravenous calcium has always afforded me a simple pleasure, and when I pushed my arm in again, the difference was remarkable. The previously flaccid uterus gripped at my hand, and as the cow went into a long, expulsive effort, she turned her head, looked back at me, and opened her mouth in a muffled bellow. It was not a sound of pain, but rather as though she was saying, "I'm back in business now." "All right, my lass," I replied. "I'll stay with you till it's all over." At other times, I might have been a little chary of being overheard conversing with a cow, but with the clamour of buckets and the non-stop blasting of the radio, there was no chance of that happening. I knew that I had to guide the calf back into the correct position, and that would take time. But I had a strange sense of oneness with this animal, because neither of us seemed to be of the slightest importance in the present setting. As I lay there face down on the concrete, which grew harder all the time, and with the milkers stumbling over my prostrate form, I felt very much alone. There was just myself and number 87 for it. Another thing I missed was the sense of occasion. There was a compensation in many arduous carving in the feeling of a little drama being enacted. The worried farmer, attentive stockman, the danger of losing the calf or even the mother. It was a gripping play, and there was no doubt the vet was the leading man. He may even be the villain, but he was number one. And here I was now, a scrabbling non-entity with hardly a mention in the cast. It was the shape of things to come. And yet, the job was still there. I lifted the calf's lower jaw, and as the cow gave a heave, I eased it over the brim of the pelvis. Then I groped for the tiny legs and straightened them as another expulsive effort pushed the little creature towards me. He was definitely on his way now. I didn't rush things. Just lay there and let the cow get on with it. My worst moment was when one of the men came to put the milking machine on the temperamental animal on my right. As he tried to step beside her, she swung round, cocked her tail, and sent a jet of feces cascading over my back. The man pushed her back into place, slipped on the teat cups, then lifted the hose, which was lying ready for swilling down the byre. A moment later I felt the icy flow of water playing from my shoulders to my hips, then the application of a spare udder cloth as the helpful fellow cleaned me off. "Thanks very much," I gasped, and I was really grateful. It was the only attention I had received all morning. Within half an hour, the feet appeared at the vulva, followed by a wet nose whose nostrils twitched reassuringly. But they were big feet. This would be a bull calf, and his final entry into the world could be a tight squeeze. I got into a sitting position and gripped a slippery cloven hoof in each hand. Leaning back, feet against the dung channel, I addressed number 87 again. "Come on, old lass. A couple of good shoves and we're there." She responded with a mighty inflation of the abdomen, and the calf surged towards me as I pulled, giving me a glimpse of a broad forehead and a pair of slightly puzzled eyes. For a moment I thought the ears were going to slip through, but then the cow relaxed, and the head disappeared back inside. "Once more, girl," I pleaded, and this time it seemed that she had decided to stop playing around and get the job over with. She gave a prolonged strain which sent head and shoulders through, and as I hauled away I had only that momentary panic I always feel that the hips might jam in the pelvis. But this one didn't stick, and came sliding beautifully onto my lap. Puffing slightly, I got to my feet and parted the hind legs. Sure enough, the little scrotum was there. He was a fine bull calf. I pulled some hay from the rack and dried him off, and within minutes he was sitting up, sniffing and snorting, looking around him with interest. He wasn't the only interested party. His mother, craning round in her neck chain, gazed fascinatedly at the new arrival before releasing a deafening bellow. I seized the front feet again and pulled the calf up to the front of the stall, where the cow, after a brief examination, began to lick him from head to tail. Then, as I watched, entranced, she suddenly rose to her feet so that she could reach some of the little creature's more inaccessible corners. I smiled to myself. So, that was that. She had got over the milk fever and had a nice live calf, too. All was well with number 87. Mr. Blackburn came up and stood by my side, and I realized that the noise in the byre had subsided. The milking was finished. The farmer took off his white hat and wiped away the sweat from his brow. By God, that was a rush. We were short-handed this morning, and I was sure we were going to miss that milk fella. He's a terror. Won't wait a minute. And I've had to chase after him in a tractor with the churns afore now. As he finished speaking, a hen leapt with a squawk from the rack. Mr. Blackburn reached forward and lifted a warm, new-laid egg out of the hay. He inspected it for a moment, then turned to me. "Have you had your breakfast?" "No, of course not." "Well, tell your missus to put this in the frying pan," he said, handing me the egg. "Oh, thank you very much, Mr. Blackburn. I'll enjoy that." He nodded and continued to stand there, gazing at the cow and calf. Dairy farming is one of the hardest ways of making a living, and this pre-dawn turmoil was an everyday occurrence in his life. But I knew he was pleased with my efforts because he faced me suddenly, and his weathered features broke into a delighted grin. Without warning, he gave me a friendly thump on the chest. "Good old Jim," he said, and walked away.